Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo, and as I've been preparing you and telling you about, we're having today a gentleman who has quite an interesting background. He's known as the Tweezer Man, and I, after reading his material, started looking for the products that his company produces, and I found them. I have never, ever been aware of the Tweezer Man products before, but I found out about them, and I'm so delighted that my world is expanded by learning about a person who has walked a road to, well, let's say, through an entrepreneurial path into a journey that we're going to be sharing with you today. I want to welcome Dal LaMagna, who is in Washington, D.C. right now. Welcome to the show, Dal.
I'm pleased to be here.
Okay. All right. Pun intended. I know. This, your story, you know, you have worked in business for a number of years. It has been anything but a straight path for you. You have had all kinds of loop-de-loops and ups and downs. Why is it you wanted, you're quite successful now, why is it that you wanted to take time to put your book together? You've got Carla Rubin and Wally Carbone who helped you put this book together. Why is it important that you get your message out to people?
Well, my experience was all about failing. I used to call the book, before somebody clever at Wiley came up with the name Raising Eyebrows, I called the book Failing to Get Ahead. I had failed at everything that I tried. I made every mistake one could possibly make. I think by process of elimination, I was able to succeed finally with Tweezer Man. And I felt, having done it and succeeded, and now looking at what's going on with our economy, the American economy, and what's happening to people, it seems that a few people are becoming extremely successful, and a lot of other people are treading in place or losing their job. There's 5 million Americans who are out of work. I thought that I could make a contribution now to my country by encouraging people, inspiring them to start your own business and not be afraid to do it. Don't be afraid of failure. In fact, I always like to say, be afraid of success, not failure. I mean, one time I started a business that took over a business, actually. It was a failing restaurant that I turned around. And after about 6 months, as the place got more and more successful, I found myself working harder and harder, and I thought, why am I doing this? That's because I didn't think through my success. So I like to tell people, get over fear of failure. You're going to be okay. You can read my book, and you can avoid some of the mistakes I made. But probably you'll be able to succeed and make yourself a living. And if you're going to be afraid of anything, be afraid of succeeding and think through where you'll be when you're successful and make sure that's the life you want.
Your mother was a tremendous inspiration to you. In fact, she really was someone that when you were young, when you were on your way to Harvard Business School, she said, failure is just a perception, and you've had some mistakes. You called them failures, and your mom said, listen to yourself. The way you even say the word, it's like a big stone around your neck. You turned your failures into success. You're on your way to Harvard. It's your failures that got you there. Failure is just a perception. What a mom.
Yeah. I remember when I was really young, and I had come home with a pocket knife that I took from Tommy Conroy, my best friend, and she wanted to know where I had found it. And I said, oh, I found it outside. And she said, Dominic, she'd call me when she was going to get me. The punishment for lying will be greater than the punishment for what you've done. So she also told me that tell the truth because it's easier to remember. My mother was a constant source of advice, and she embedded in me principles that really helped me through life. This girl down the block from where we live, she was older than me, and she was tougher than me, and she punched me. And I hit her back. Holy smokes. My mother almost killed me for doing that. Yeah. She taught me never to strike a woman. And I never dared do it again.
I gotcha. It's a good thing you learned that young. Your mother really got it. Your mother is a beautiful woman, by the way. You have a picture of her. She's absolutely gorgeous. Let's take a moment and talk about a term you use in your book, responsible capitalism. Now, I have to tell you, just yesterday, and I'm backstepping a little bit, I was talking with a man who had been a multimillionaire, had all of the trappings of success. He could take himself and his family. They'd go to Hawaii. They'd go to Europe. They'd go wherever they wanted to go. He had all kinds of money. And he was having a very successful time in business, and then he was in an airport one day, and he had a panic attack. And he had a panic attack that was so severe that the opportunity that he was flying towards didn't happen because he wouldn't get on the plane. And from that moment until yesterday when I was chatting with him, he has been in nothing but a downward spiral. He lost every single thing that he had in the way of wealth. He didn't lose his family, but he did lose everything. And when I talked to him yesterday, he didn't even have enough money to pay his rent. When someone goes through that, and we have a lot of Americans that have been laid off, they are in, or maybe they're even going to be handed their pink slips this year because of the company's downsizing or whatever. Fear of failure is something that people think they should not have to experience. In your experience, though, and a lot of it do because of your mother's attitude, you just kept on marching, kept on moving forward. What would you say to anyone today, like this gentleman that I talked with yesterday? I mean, he's not quite a street person, but he's a hair breadth away from it.
Well, I don't know about his story, but all I know is that my father worked three jobs to support us five kids. And he was the first to say, Dal, if you can avoid it, if you can, don't take on responsibilities before you can afford it. Don't spend your life working three jobs to support your family. If you have a chance, go for it. And he actually was my first investor. He would back me on all the different deals that I came up with, like, Cupid Computer when I was converting to matching people by computer back in 1967, or I was converting drive-in movie theaters into drive-in discotheques, and or selling waterbeds in Harvard Square. I was always trying things, and a lot of these things had to be so revolutionary that they could fund themselves or take off themselves because the ideas were so revolutionary and needed a little capital. And my father was there, to push me to do it. In a way, I probably didn't get married at an early age because of my fear that I would end up like my father. I would get a bunch of kids, and then next thing you know, I'd be forced to have to go out and get any job just to feed them. So all I could say is maybe I'm different, but I don't see myself much different than other people in terms of being able to just pick myself up and start all over again. As long as I have my health, I've got my brains, there are things that you can do to make a living and do them well. I don't know how many kids out there realize that if they don't have a job right now, the young people, you can become computer consultants to us baby boomers. I'm 64. Most of my generation doesn't know how to get on Facebook or even how to use our computers, and a lot of us are still on AOL download. And I remembered I went over to a neighbor who didn't know that he was on AOL paying for dial-up when he had Comcast right there, and he could easily get broadband and pay less for it. There are jobs out there that you can create for yourself. And, you know, people ask, well, all right, so you're making a living. You say you're an electrician or you're a carpenter or you've got a little store that you've opened up in your town, and you're making a living now and you're supporting yourself. And then the question is, how do you turn that into making a fortune? And if you want, we can talk a little bit about that. I did that. I went from selling tweezers one at a time and making a nice living to selling a company for millions of dollars and making a lot of people rich along the way.
Well, why don't you share with my audience how you were able, after all these different failures? I mean, you went to Harvard, if I remember correctly. You were given a student loan, and you literally gambled that money away and had to go back to the people that gave you the loan saying, I've blown it. Am I right?
Yeah, I think I'm one of the only students that ever go to Harvard Business School that owed the school twice as much as it cost to go.
Uh-huh.
I lost the student loan. I don't know why they sent it to me. They don't do that anymore. I helped change the precedent. I lost it the first day of class on a gold stock that I bought call options on with my money because I thought it was such a good idea because I got a tip from another Harvard Business School student. Yeah. The thing is that when you want to start a business and you thought through it and you're ready to go, I tell people, first of all, you better be organized. If you're not an organized person, learn how to be, because running your own business is all about being organizing. And then you want to focus. If you're an entrepreneur type and you're always coming up with ideas, you can get distracted by your own energy and creativity. Pick something and focus on it like a laser beam. Be patient. Don't try to make $1 million overnight. I did that, and I blew a couple of good businesses that I started. Don't buy anything you don't need, and when you do buy it used. You can go on Craigslist and pretty much get anything you need. When you're buying something, always ask the price before you buy it and ask if you can get a better price. And don't take on a partner. If you want a partner, take on two, because you never want to be in a situation I was where you and your partner couldn't agree and you never get anything done. You can't make a decision. But if you have two partners, you can always get someone who's always going to – you'll always get a decision made. And concentrating and doing all these things, you have a pretty good chance of succeeding. And I keep track of things. That's another thing. And I tell people that I kept track of everything. I had a checkbook. I didn't use my credit card for my business. I kept my business and personal stuff separate. I did monthly statements to figure out where I am. And it's really easy these days because there's Quicken or QuickBooks that you can use to keep track of your expenses and automatically generate profit and loss statements. It's very simple. You do all this, and then you come to a moment where it's time to hire someone. And the person you're going to hire, they better be organized. I remember I used to follow, when I was in the early days of Tweezer Man, I would follow my candidates for a job. And initial jobs are usually jobs where you had to be an organized person to do them. I'd follow them out to their car. If their car was messy, I wouldn't hire them. Then the question is, well, how do you go from, say, now you got to the point where you're actually successful, meaning that you're paying yourself, you're making a living with your work. How do you go from that to making a fortune? How do you grow your business? And that's all about now learning how to, one, delegate, being willing to delegate. A lot of people are just too reluctant to let other people do things because they do them best. And empower your employees as you hire them. And empowering your employees means that you give them responsibility. I cut my employees at Tweezer Man in on the profits. My employees shared 5% of the profits every year. When I set up the company in the beginning, I budgeted 20% of the company to be owned by my employees so that by the time I sold the company 25 years later, every single employee who worked for me had a piece of the company, and that added up to 20%. My employees, for instance, made, I think they shared about $12 million when I sold the company and didn't lose their jobs. And you give them you give them more responsibility than they even they think they could have. I set up a steering committee so that I ran the company with my employees. They were my partners. I was so grateful that people would show up for work, by the way, and do things that I didn't want to do. I didn't want to collect bills, for instance. That's one of the things that if you have a business already and you bill out, you always have people who are not paying you, and then you got to get on the call and start calling them. I found this woman who loved to do it. I flyed the neighborhood. And when you talk about empowering your employees and taking care of them and getting health insurance, some kind of health insurance, I mean, if you can't afford the full-blown thing, get something that covers people for, you know, strokes and big catastrophes, you're practicing what you referred to before as responsible capitalism. And the way responsible capitalism works is that you operate your business to benefit not only yourself and the shareholders, but also and your customers, because they benefit from, but your employees, your community, your vendors, all the stakeholders of your business participate in its success. And then you start having these what we call best practices, where in my case, responsible capitalism meant I paid a living wage and I didn't sully the environment. When I did my packaging, I'd look for ways of keeping it simple. In fact, my first tweezer I put in a clear tube, and that was the package, and that's how I sold it. So there was no packaging. It was all a contained unit.
Mm-hmm.
And the result is that you will be able to do more than you could possibly do alone. I never wanted personally to be running a factory that had a 65,000-square-foot factory with 200 employees. I just never wanted that responsibility. But because I empowered my employees and they ran the company, and as soon as I figured out how to do it, I turned it over to somebody else, including being president of the company. I was the CEO of the company. I was after the company matured, I'd be the one who would go out and push the frontier of the company out, for instance. You know, we never sold in Asia. So one year I went to Hong Kong to a trade show and I opened up distributors in Asia and set up that whole thing. And then when I came home, I hired an export manager to do it. So that's the role I played. I was the one who held the culture. So when you get that far, when you're doing that, the company starts to make money on its own, meaning you're not having to earn every dollar yourself and sell every product and invent every product and do it all yourself. When other people are doing it, you're doing it as a team. And that's, I believe, is the future for America. The new economy of America is that everybody is participating and everybody is benefiting. Now what we have now, which is, gee, where the hell is our middle class going? It seems that fewer and fewer people are making more and more money. I personally get very aggravated when I see that someone has paid themselves $50 million salary to run a company. How could they possibly be worth that? There's that movie out that I think is terrific, A Company of Men. It's a very sad story because you watch these guys lose their jobs, good jobs. And the story has a happy ending, in my opinion. It was a happy ending because at the end, and I don't mind giving it away because it's a good enough movie to watch on its own, but at the end, one of these rich guys does something that if the rich guys and gals of America did, everybody would be better off. You know, he took his $100 million and he opened up a new company, and he hired all the people who were laid off from his old company.
Mm-hmm.
I'm real anxious to see what the president's going to have to say about job creation in this country at 9 o'clock, because I believe that it's the small business people out there, your listeners, starting jobs, hiring themselves and hiring their people they know, who are going to carry this economy on its back out of this mess. And the way you and what they need, the help they need from our government is, of course, we need health on health care. We need microloans that doesn't seem to be happening in America. A microloan is a small amount of money lent to a startup business. In Bangladesh, it's $500. Well, in America, it's $5,000. So, you know, a $5,000 loan for someone who has a good business idea and needs to get going, with you can't borrow money these days unless you have collateral, so that eliminates a lot of people. I'm kind of ranting on, but the book is called Raising Eyebrows, A Failed Entrepreneur Finally Gets It Right. And as you asked me in the beginning, what I do, it. I did it to inspire people, inspire your listeners to go out and do that idea that I've always talked about and that for your success and figure out a way to make a living and carry on.
You have a Professor Levitt that when you were interacting with the Coca-Cola company, that he was quite an inspiration to you. And he had published a book called Marketing Myopia. And you have a number, you know, you talk about the professor. You also have a number of comments through your book, which I think some people would just say, oh, you're out of your mind. You don't know what you're talking about. One of them is be wary of test marketing your product. You say tests are by definition artificial and rarely yield helpful results. What brought you to that attitude?
In fact, I've had tests that I've done ruin my product and stop the thing from happening. Like, for instance, one of my products was Lamagna lasagna baking pans. I used to make lasagna and would burn my finger when I was trying to pick up the noodles to crisscross them in the pan. So I made these pans perfectly sized to make lasagna. So I went out and thought I'd run a test with a local lasagna company. And what they did was they put a coupon inside the lasagna boxes selling my pans. Well, we put 1,000 coupons in the boxes. And you think that's a lot. And how many people are going to respond to that? Well, we got 2 orders from 1,000. And that seemed like a failure. But if I had not done that, the noodle company was Globe A1 Noodles out in California, they were willing to put it on the box. And I had the brilliant idea, well, let's test it. Well, why the hell did I do that? Just put the coupon on the box. Then there would have been 100,000, 200,000 coupons on the box. And every time you bought lasagna, you'd see it. You would have bought my pan. I would have been in business selling lasagna pans. Another thing I did was when I was doing Tweezerman and I was trying to break into Target, they said, oh, let's test your product. So they put an end cap display of the Tweezerman products in the store. And it was nowhere located near the grooming tools where you would if you go to buy a tweezer, where would you go in the store? We weren't there. We were somewhere else. So, of course, we're not going to move any product like we would move if we were in front of the people. So that you might say, was a badly run test, meaning it wasn't put in the right place. But I should not have agreed to that particular test. I should have insisted that my products be put where the other products that are like it are put, and it would have worked out. Ted Levitt, by the way, he's now deceased. When he wrote Marketing Myopia, he basically, his advice was, don't forget the business you're in. He refers to the horse and buggy people. If they had realized they were in the transportation business, when cars came around, they would have got into the car business because they were in the transportation business, not stick to their guts with the horse and buggy and end up going out of business because they became obsolete. So, for me, when I'm doing Tweezerman, I'm not really in the tweezer business, even though I was selling tweezers. I consider myself to be in the grooming business, and where my focus was, all right, what tools do you need to take care of yourself and make yourself look good? And thinking about it that way, not having just my mind looking to tweezers and thinking I'm just selling tweezers, instead of me trying to sell tweezers after I sell the eyebrow tweezer, now go sell tweezers to people who are in industry or dentists who use tweezers or doctors. I thought of myself as being someone who is in the grooming business, and so I came out with another product. My second product was a nail cuticle nail clipper, and then a nail clipper, and then a skincare tool. The other thing that Ted Levitt used to say was it's best to be second first, because when you're an innovative person and you create a new product, you expend all your energy and resources on getting people to notice it and be interested in it, and then you're exhausted and you've used up all your money, and then someone else comes, the first person to come second takes advantage of what you've done. So my motto became, I think it's in the book, it's best to be first and second first.
Mm-hmm.
After I succeeded with my tweezer and sold, selling a $20 tweezer in high-end stores well and got very successful, I didn't knock myself off, but I copied my own product, made a different version of it, and sold it in the chain drugstores. And I was the first to do that. So I, following the advice of my Professor Ted Levitt.
Well, you state in your book that your company, Tweezerman, by the way, who came up with the term Tweezerman? Was this just something that somebody yelled out one day and said, hey, the Tweezerman's here?
That's it. I started with a splinter tweezer, and I was going around the lumber yards and hardware stores selling those, and a girl, a friend of my brother, Gregory, said, hey, she worked in a beauty salon, get me a good eyebrow tweezer. These are great tweezers. They were great. They were very, very precise, and they were needle-pointed, but they can't be needle-pointed, obviously, I could sell them as eyebrow tweezers to my clients. So I went to the supplier and got a diamond tweezer that they used to handle diamonds and put it in a tube and sold them to her, and she started selling 6 or 7 a week. Yeah, she was selling them every week, and I thought, wow. So I went around myself to other beauty salons selling these tweezers, and I just walk in and say, here, try this. You probably want to buy it when you try it, and they did. And then I thought, my name's Dal LaMagna, Pierre Cardin, Yves Saint Laurent. It all sounds the same. I named my company Dal LaMagna Grooming, and I put my name on the tweezers, and I continued to do that. I went around to the salons, and I went back to a salon in Great Neck, and when I walked in, the women at the counter yelled, literally yelled, as you said, the tweezer man is here, and that was it. I changed my name on the spot. My Harvard Business School classmates were telling me that it was ridiculous, it's a stupid name, it's an elegant product, you should have a name like Hofritz, which was a competitor, something that sounds German or Swiss, and I stuck with Tweezerman, and I'm very grateful I did. I like people to know what I'm doing, and that's how I name my companies.
Mm-hmm.
When I was in Newport one summer, I got a job running the parking lot of a hotel. Now, I didn't realize that they wanted me to just park cars. I thought, you know, they said go run the parking lot. So I went out and I put a sign up, the parking lot, and started charging people to park their cars because we were across the street from the beach and the parking lot across the beach was filling up. And I walked in and handed $250 to the owners of the hotel. It was Bud Castle and I forgot the other fellow's name. And they looked at me and said, what's this? I said, well, you told me to run a parking lot, so I ran a parking lot. And one of the partners got very upset. He said, you didn't charge the people staying at the hotel to park their cars, did you? I said, no, I charged the beach parkers. So they got a kick out of that, and they gave me half. They let me keep the money, and then they split it with me, and then I ended up running this parking lot. Then I converted the parking lot one weekend during the Newport Folk Festival to a barbecue. So I put up a sign, the barbecue. The point is that name your company as close to what you're doing as you can. Don't try to be fancy because the people who come up with these fancy names that catch on, like say Google, what does Google mean before you did it? Now, mm-hmm. those are things that require a lot of marketing and a lot of presence before they become brands.
I agree. Well, Dal, I know we're just about out of time. Your story is fascinating. You go into when you literally hit walls, even with Tweezerman, when you had to come up with new creative ideas. You're a man that has had such an interesting life. You've got a very good background, and you've not only been involved in the grooming business, but you've also been involved with films, and you're a blogger for the Huffington Post. You're a man that serialized like the Energizer Bunny. You just keep going, going, and going. Do you have a website that people can go to?
RaisingEyebrows.com. And at the website, there's Ask Dal, which is Dal's my name. And I invite people to ask me questions about their businesses and how to proceed, and then I'll answer them. And then you could actually read questions and answers, and a lot of questions get repeated. So that's another thing that I'm doing to help people start in their business, do it successfully, and do it responsibly.
Well, that's great. That's an option.
RaisingEyebrows.com.
RaisingEyebrows.com, yes. And how often do you have a chance from a successful entrepreneur who did follow the road of failure to a degree, but yet grew from it, I think you might find it interesting. RaisingEyebrows.com, and he is the Tweezer Man, Mr. Dale LaMagna. Thank you so much for being my guest today. It's been an absolute delight having you, and much success with your book.
Thank you, and thanks for the work you're doing. You're out there doing the same thing I'm trying to do. Inspire your listeners to get up and do something that's going to change their life and help their neighbors.
Yes, sir. Thank you so much. This is Donna Sebo. Go again. Check out RaisingEyebrows.com. Mr. Dale LaMagna. Donna Sebo, we are taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio. I'm the author of the cutting-edge book, Hooked on Raw. I want to give you and your loved ones the gift of optimum health. So when you order my book, Hooked on Raw, which has over 350 delicious, healthy recipes, I'll include my new DVD, What's Not Cooking in Rio's Kitchen, for a half price. Just go to my website, rawfoodinfo.com, and click on Holiday Special. That's rawfoodinfo.com. Click on Holiday Special.
Welcome back. Telephone number to call in to if you would like to chat with me directly. Of course, I'd be happy to light up your life with a little bit of intuitive insight. 888-815-9756 is the telephone number. 888-815-9756. If you're a new listener, all you need to know is when you call in, I just want your first name or your initial. And then after that, just sit back, relax, let me tell you what I perceive. When I finish, then you are welcome to ask me a question about anything that strikes your fancy. Again, 888-815-9756. Well, let me tell you who's coming up tomorrow. Feed Your Brain, Lose Your Belly. Larry McCleary is going to be our guest, Dr. McCleary. And he's got some fascinating information about how what we put into our bodies nourishes us mentally through the brain and how that enables us also to get rid of maybe a few of those extra pounds that are still hanging on from the holidays. Thursday, we're going to be talking with Peak of the Devil. Now, this isn't the old-fashioned image of this crazy guy with long horns that's out there with a fork that's going to say, I'm coming after you. No, we're not talking about that. We're talking about the oil industry, and we're going to be talking with Chip Haynes. Quantum Healing, Diana Minnick is going to be my guest. We're going to be discussing various ways of healing, different applications for wellness, and I think you will find the subject a fascinating one. And then Monday, the last day of this month, we're going to be talking Secrets of a Working Dog. Yes, that's Bella the Boxer. Oh, is she adorable? Well, I do have to tell you that Ellen Galvin, who is Bella's owner, has helped Bella write this book. So I think you'll enjoy her. She's got a good sense of humor, and it is a wonderful story. So that's our lineup for the guests upcoming for the rest of this month, and I do hope you'll tell your friends so that they can know, too. And don't forget, if you miss a show, we have the archives, and you would be able to then listen to it whenever you want. That's what the archives are all about. Well, I wanted to share with you a fun story here. And again, if you want to give me a buzz, 888-815. I have some odds and ends of material that I wanted to share with you. There's a guy by the name of Sweeney Todd. And in the 19th century, he had a reputation that was absolutely unreal. But he wasn't, well, he was supposed to be a fictitious character, but apparently somebody did some homework on him. And this legend of this sort of unscrupulous person was actually, according to a scholar by the name of Peter Haining, that Sweeney Todd was a real historical figure. Now, during the 1800s, this man apparently committed a lot of crimes, but, well, as so many things do, with the telling of the story, legends are built. And that's why so frequently you'll hear it stated by people that study history. If you have a legend that has survived the course of time, there's usually a nugget of truth in it somewhere. And this is a little bit of a nugget of truth about this particular criminal personality. He had a barber shop on London's Fleet Street, and it was right next door to a church called St. Dunstan's. Now, he had a very simple shop. It wasn't fancy in those days. It was just one room, and there was a single barber chair that was located in the middle of the floor. But Sweeney was a man of inventive nature, and I'm going to share that with you after I talk with our caller today. Hello, caller. Welcome to the show. First name or initial, and where are you calling in from?
Sandy from San Diego.
Hi, Sandy. Sun shining down there in San Diego?
Well, sort of.
I was going to ask
you. It was very
you,
sunny
send up
yesterday,
your,
but a little yes. cloudy today.
Okay. Well, when it pops out, would you send it an email mentally and say, come on, send some of your golden glow up to the Pacific Northwest. We sure would like it up here.
Absolutely.
Oh, cool. That's what I like, Sandy. Good cooperation. Okay. One of the things that I'm looking at right away for you is you are a person that really has learned how to laugh at life. You have a good sense of humor, but you're really stopping the taking yourself so seriously, which was pretty intense for you for a few years. But what I like here is that not only are you not taking certain things too personally, too seriously, but you're thinking through, you're a strategist, and this is what I'm observing you doing, and I think you're doing quite a good job with it. Well, your strategist talents are going to be increasing because there is something in a job environment where I would call you a mediator, trying to balance out perceptions on the parts of different people and trying to get them all on the same track so that they have the same image of the ultimate result that they should have, so that they're not all off in their little mental ivory towers. And this is something that you're really quite good at, and I don't know if you do much in the way of coordinating activities, events, or business meetings of any kind, but I would really say that your skill, if you refine it, is going to be worth its weight in gold and then some. There is also a need for you to focus on wellness. You need some alone time. I think you have literally used yourself up, and you do this, and you've had this pattern for a long time. So what I want you to do, I want you to be aware of the fact that you have to give yourself some me time. I was reading about a woman today that she gave herself what she called a passionate purpose day. It was all for her. Didn't include anybody else unless she wanted them there. She just did something that whole day that was really the love of her life, whether it was having a cup of tea, going getting rubbed down at a spa, whatever it was. It could have been sitting in a closet with the light on and just meditating. Who knows? But her day was her day, and she said it turned her around in so many ways. And I think you need to do something like that for yourself, because it's too easy for you to become the absorbing sponge of other people's stuff. And I want to say, you've got to give some time to yourself, because you're going to pay a price with your health, and you don't want to do that. What question do you have for me today, Sandy?
Well, I guess it's about finances, my financial future. What do you see is happening there?
Well, let me just say this to you. You are a good manager of money. So I look at you right now, and you have the opportunity, if you're willing to capitalize on your skills, you're going to find yourself being better off financially within 3 years than you've ever been before. So I think it's a matter of really taking the time out to evaluate what your real strengths are and what it is that you really enjoy, and then put yourself into those modalities where that fits. Again, I think you're a marvelous organizer. I think you are a wonderful coordinator. You are great at connecting people. You just really do a good job with that. What are you doing right now? And why are you so concerned about your money? Are you out of work? What's happening?
That is so funny. You hit it right on. I am my hobby. I live in other people's homes for a living. That's my job right now. But my hobby is when I get into their homes is to organize the pantries and organize their houses. That is so funny.
Hun, you've got a job right there.
Well, but I don't know if I want to do this the rest of my life. So.
Well, who cares? This is something. You are a person that really likes to bring things together. And
yes.
You can give yourself a title. You know, the guest that I had on, Dal LaMagna, just earlier, before you called in,
mm-hmm.
He was saying, name your business something that represents what it is. And just put yourself out there. This is what you love to do. What I would suggest that you do is get some letters of reference from people that said, we love having her as a house sitter because, for heaven's sakes, I come back and everything's organized. It's wonderful. I'm happy. I know where my burrito mix is. I know where my sheets are. I know where the dog food is. I know where the screwdrivers are. So, I mean, this is terrific. This is wonderful. And you have this personal relationship with people. Why not market it? Why not capitalize on it? There's no reason in the world that you couldn't do it. You look at companies like Mary Maid and Mary Kay and all of these others that started with someone being very good at what they did, and eventually they said, I can't do it all. I'm going to see what I can do with someone else.
Okay.
Go for it.
Sounds great to me.
I think so. And I think you will find, if you check on the Internet, there are people that do that. They are professional organizers. They will go in, they'll assess things, and they will help people out.
Okay.
So I think you can do quite nicely.
Well, I appreciate that vote of confidence.
Absolutely. You can call me anytime. I'll be happy to give you the vote of confidence.
Okay.
Sandy, you have a wonderful, wonderful 2011, and thanks so much for calling in today.
Thanks.
Bye-bye. This is Donna Siebel, and if you'd like to call in, let me light up your life with a little bit of insight. Remember, I was talking to you about a character, Sweeney Todd, before the caller called in? Well, he had a barbershop, single barber chair located in the middle of the floor. Now, this man was inventive. He rigged up an ingenious device, a trap door. Mm-hmm. The chair sat right on top of a trap door. Now, this is what this criminal did. When a wealthy customer would come in and the coast was clear, he'd pull a lever that was hidden from the view of the customer. And, of course, the customer in the chair went boom down right into the trap door into his basement. And when that happened, another barber chair would pop up to take the place of the one in the cellar. So you never saw a missing chair. Now, this is what Mr. Sweeney Todd would do. He would run as fast as he could down to his basement. Now, if the fall had not killed the victim that he had in his chair, he assisted him. Mm-hmm. He executed his demise, and then he'd take the corpse, take everything off of it, and then he'd carve the corpse up like a butcher would. Then he delivered it to his accomplice and his mistress, whose name was Marguerite Lovett. And she ran a meat pie shop on Bill Lane. Mm-hmm. Yes, 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 you've got it right. She used that meat for her meat pies. Now, this is what Sweeney did. This is like a CSI special, but a long time ago. Now, what he would do with those body parts that weren't worthy of consumption, he found a tunnel and catacombs beneath the church, and there, because they had burial vaults down there, he would put the remains of his victims. Well, he was caught. Mm-hmm. The parishioners of St. Dunstan's began to notice an odor, and that's where they found the remains of Sweeney's victims, because the bloody footprints that he left led them back to his barbershop, as well as Mrs. Lovett's pie place. Now, the public, when they found out what this woman had been doing, tried to lynch her right then and there. But the London police there got there first. They saved her from that moment with the public and Mr. Sweeney, and they were both hung from the gallows in England. Grisly story? Yes, it is. But it just goes to show you there are always those people in every generation that do sometimes things they wouldn't imagine. So this man's story is really a true one. And then it went on to become legend in various forms. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break for just a moment. Don't go away. We'll be back. I've got some good recipes and then also a little bit of that and a little bit of that and a wonderful story about a couple who say, never, ever give up on your dreams. It'll touch your heart. We'll be back in just a moment.
Are you concerned about nutrition? Do you work hard to eat right, try to feed yourself and your family nutritious food? Well, you'll want to know about glyconutrients. What are they? These are sugars that are present in nature. However, we're not getting them in our food anymore. Scientific study is proving that these sugars are necessary for all cellular and immune system function. Over 20,000 studies are conducted each year on glycoforms alone. These are the sugar protein structure that line each and every cell of the body. 4 out of the last 8 Nobel Prizes in physiology have been awarded for research in the area of cellular communication and how these sugars work in the body. This is Donna Sebo. Every day I bring to you information that will empower and light up your life. I would like to invite you to visit my website, DelphiInternational.com, and find out more about these glyconutrients. That's DelphiInternational.com. Go to my website, go to the left side of the screen, tap on the button that says glyconutrients. MIT's Technology Review, February 2003, states that glycomics is one of the 10 emerging technologies that will change the world. Education is the key to advancement of understanding and making our lives better. Visit my site, DelphiInternational.com. Go to the left side of the screen and tap on the button that says glyconutrients. I know it'll make a difference for you, as it has for me.
Hi, this is Rio, host of the Hooked on Raw radio show on rawenergyradio.com. If you're interested in the raw and living food lifestyle, along with the real story of what's happening to our health freedoms, and you don't mind a little controversy, listen to my radio show and podcasts on rawenergyradio.com. Each week, we interview guests and cover topics you won't hear on mainstream radio. Get informed, healthy, and involved. rawenergyradio.com.
Hi, this is Donna. Now, don't forget, tomorrow we're going to be talking about Feed Your Brain, Lose Your Belly with Larry McCleary. He's going to be my guest. I wanted to share a story with you about a wonderful couple. And they had a big dream, and that was of adopting a child. And there's a quote by Bernard Berenson, "Miracles happen to those who believe in them." And this couple seems to really be representative of that. Nancy and her husband, Mark, wanted children, but Nancy had some physical problems. She had a blood clotting disorder, and so consequently, the possibility of her carrying a child to full term just wasn't going to happen because of her medical condition. Well, they decided, after some challenges of trying for quite a while to have a child, when this final step occurred, she said, okay, why don't we try to adopt? So they went through all the paperwork and were just absolutely approved for becoming parents. But there were circumstances that affected them, totally unexpected, and it was all about her husband, Mark. Firefighter, the chimney in a building had collapsed on him. He was in serious condition. He had a brain bleed, fractured skull. His lungs had collapsed. He had 35 broken bones. His right arm had to be amputated because it was too damaged to save. I mean, this was really tragic for this fireman. Well, Nancy, after finding out what happened with her husband, she decided that even though they had gotten a call from an adoption agency about a child, it was available to them, she called them back and said, my husband is in very serious condition. Take our file out because I don't know that we're going to be able to do this. Now, her husband's condition was so critical that he was given the last rites. And it was on her 40th birthday, his 27 days later, his eyes opened and he was going to survive. They actually didn't think he was going to make it. Now, his jaw had been broken, wired shut, and she just said, we're going to make it, and he spent four more weeks in the hospital, went home for extensive rehabilitation, but he said to his wife, he said, there's a baby out there somewhere that needs this, and he learned, because they had to amputate his leg, that he got a prosthetic leg, and he fought very, very hard to be able to come back and then go back to work. Believe it or not, within a year after his accident, he became an ambulance dispatcher and driver and said, go ahead and call back the adoption agency. So they did. Well, the unbelievable happened because it seemed like getting a child wasn't going to be possible. However, Nancy got a call from the adoption agency and said to her, you are going to get your baby. There was a young birth mother who had recognized this couple from the news coverage of the accident, and she said, I want them to have my baby. She wasn't able to take care of it, so she gave it to this couple. And when Connor was born, Nancy, was right there at the birth of this child, and she was thrilled. The little boy is almost a year old now, and she said, we would never have believed that we could have a child of our own and have the family that we've got, not with all the things that hit us. So Bernard Berenson's statement, miracles happen to those who believe in them, you just don't know how those miracles are going to actually evolve. There are so many things that can happen in life. It's fascinating. I think so. And you can be successful. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Seaboy. I look forward to chatting with you tomorrow, same time, same place, right here at bbsradio.com. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Seaboy Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Seaboy Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.